Mr. Vauxhall Rail 5. So you got back to Bulford about September of 44. What happened next?
Well, we then went back to doing our training, route marches, carrying our loads that we would take into action with us, because that wasn't much good doing a route march with nothing on. You had to carry all the equipment and weapons and ammunition and everything that you needed, because we had no transport, very little transport of our own.
How did your legs stand up to these
All right. I mean, the longest march I ever did was 50 miles in 24 hours.
And your leg was all right?
Oh, Once I got it going, that was all right. No trouble. I went back to parachuting.
It was all right. Yeah. So, you were doing these route marches, training, for how long?
Well, then, we used to go out once every month, every few weeks, to and go out and do a field firing practice range. And we used to go out overnight, build a big bonfire, all go out and have a booze up, and come back in about midnight and sit around a campfire, and that was it. And then you had to go and do a field firing exercise the next morning.
What was a field firing exercise?
Well, when you went out in the field and did fired live ammunition and behaved exactly as you would do if you were actually in action.
You weren't practicing jumps, though?
No, we did do one or two. One odd practice jump, but there's not much you can do to keep on practicing jumps. I mean, once you jump out the aircraft, you come down on the ground, it's the same whatever, however often you do it. Because we always only had one parachute, and there was never any room to open the second one if the first one hadn't opened anyway. So, because we never jumped from more than 600 feet. So if your first parachute didn't open, you didn't have much time to use the second one. But in the case, we didn't have much second one, so that was it. And we went back, and as I say, we went out on these field firing exercises. Well, we went out just before Christmas. Everything was all laid on for us to have Christmas at home. Well, not at home, but, at Bulford. We went out on this field firing exercise, went out in the evening, got three sheets to the wind, came back, and there was an officer standing waiting for us. Moved back to the barracks straight away. We're going out to the Ardennes tomorrow. So we all piled into trucks and went back in, got ourselves sorted. And then on Christmas Eve, we went down to, I think it was Portsmouth we went from, and went on board a Cross Channel ferry to be taken over to the Hook of Holland. But there was e-boat action in the channel that night, so we got turned back. So we were on going across actually on Christmas Day. We had hardtack biscuits and jam for our Christmas dinner. And then when we got to the Hook, we went up the Autobahn in trucks.
Where did you landed Belgium. At the Hook of Holland?
Yeah. Went in up to Belgium to place up in the hills. I can't remember the name of it. I think it was the Abbey Maradissou or something like that. Anyway, it was
Belgium.
An abbey.
The higher wooded area.
Yeah, and we were there. We went up. As I say, it was December, freezing, blooming cold. Trucks, three-ton trucks with the canopy open both ends, so we were hurtling along this blooming autobahn. Frozen, blooming stiff. There was no way of getting out of the wind because doing about 30 mile an hour in a truck with the canopy open both ends, it isn't very pleasant. But anyway, eventually we got up in to Belgium, and we were up there. And then we moved through to March in the...
So you weren't actually involved in the Ardennes business, you were just part of the forces assembling to cover?
Well, no, we were there to plug the gaps that the Yanks had left, unfortunately. And we were involved in it. I mean, we were there.
What do you remember? Was there any actual fighting, or was it just...
Not at brigade headquarters, because we were always sort of a little way back. But we did go out and do patrols, and for other battalions, and sometimes go and relieve another platoon for a couple of days so they could have a bit of a rest in a battalion. And it was just a matter of, once again, living with the snow and the ice and everything else that was going. And then we moved to March.
What happened in February? How was it?
Well, we moved up to March.
Okay.
And then moved from there up to the, up into Holland, up onto the River Maas. And we were up there. And once again, we went and did a fortnight in the line with, and relieved a platoon of the 9th Para Battalion. And went out on patrols in, down by the river, and had patrols, helped make a base for patrols going across the river.
Now, what do you remember of those patrols? Tell us, how would you prepare for patrols?
Well, you make sure all your weapons were serviceable, and you got all your ammunition and all your equipment was in good order. And then at night, out you go.
How many?
Usually a section, 10 of you. Probably they'd probably have an officer with you, or might have a sergeant with you, or I might lead the patrol myself.
What would a typical patrol be like? Can you describe it to us?
Well, we went out into sort of down by the river and laid up, waiting to see if any Germans came across the river or anything. And you sort of laid up all night. You didn't go to sleep. Everybody was awake. You all had to be on the alert. And then come daylight, well, just for daylight, you come back in. You had to go out and come back in the same way, and you had to make sure that the people knew that you were coming in. I mean, you had wirelesses, so you were able to say, give them a tip that you were coming in. And it was just a matter of, if there was any firing or anything, you had to fire back.
Anything ever happened with you on your...
No, we were fairly quiet. I did. We did have went out on patrol one day during the day, and when we came back, one of my blokes jumped into the truck and his Sten gun hit the floor of the truck and fired and killed him.
Now, this was the thing about Sten guns. You were aware. Were you aware of it before this?
Yeah. Well, we were always aware that they weren't very stable weapons, because the bolt and the spring were so heavy, or the bolt was so heavy, that the slightest bang on the floor, and if you've got the magazine on it, slightest bang, and the bolt would come back enough to shoot forward and fire the blooming weapon. You didn't even have to touch it. That was why it was always imperative that you had the safety catch on. Well, this young lad hadn't. So, as I say, he jumped into the truck, Sten gun hit the floor, and there was a burst of fire, and he was dead. And that taught us a lesson to make sure the Sten guns, if you had one, make sure it was properly on safe.
And anything else happened? This is March.
Yeah, this was in up on the River Maas in Holland, and then I think it was the 21st of February. We came home. In trains.
Sorry, so you moved up to the Mars. So you went up there in January,
yeah.
And then you stayed there till February.
Yeah.
Sorry, I misheard you. Mars, March, yeah, right.
On the 21st of February, I think it was 21st of February, we came home in train. They came down, brought us home, back to Bulford, where we did a little bit of training, well, we had leave, did a little bit of training. And then on the 21st of March, or 24th of March, we flew back over to land over the Rhine, parachute over the Rhine, so we were only home a month.
Now, what do you remember of that?
Well, we flew off from an airfield in Essex, and I can't remember the name of it. I don't know where the airfield was, because we weren't there very long. I mean, it was a hurried operation. By the time we'd had a fortnight's leave, come back, there was only a fortnight in which to get ready. We didn't go into particularly, I don't think we went into a concentration area there. It was up there, stay for a night or so, and then down to the airfield and fly the next morning. And we flew in an air armada, which they said was too large to form up over southern England, And it wasn't until we got over the continent that the Armada could form up. And I think it formed up over about Belgium. And then we flew over and dropped over the Rhine near a place called Hammenkeln.
Called what?
Hammenkeln. Hamminkeln. It was just the other side of the Rhine. On the German side of it, well.
And what do you remember of that drop?
Well, the one thing I remember is that we had an, the Americans dropped us, and we had an American jump master, as he was called, in the aircraft with us. And when we got over Belgium, he lowered a blooming great round steel plate that was strapped to the side of the aircraft, lowered it down onto the floor, got a little wooden stool put on the middle, got his flak jacket and flak helmet on, and then he sat on his stool, and that's where he was when I left. He was making sure he didn't get hit anywhere.
What did you think of that?
Well, I could have pushed him out the bloody door if I'd had a chance. But, yeah, he was, I suppose, self-preservation. Didn't think much of it personally, but there you are.
It was a US Dakota, then?
Yeah, and they we dropped, this time, it was a daylight drop, at 10 o'clock in the morning, I think. And we were able to see, and it was down onto a DZ, which they were quite easy to find over the river. And I, once again, was number 20, jumped out, and I landed up in the trees, about 20 foot up off the ground.
Well, that could be very dangerous.
I managed to get myself down, and then some twit fired at me, but luckily he missed. And I saw a line of bullets kick the dust up alongside me.
German or British fired at you?
I don't know who it was. I didn't wait to find out, I'll tell you. I got down behind a tree out of the blooming way. But this was it. But
This was near Hammenkeln?
Near Hammenkeln, yeah. And then they, I'm told, I don't know how true it was, I'm told that they took over 350 of our own dead off that DZ. Because it was there was a German company occupying the landing zone. So luckily I got away with
it. But you didn't see any signs?
I got away with it. I was lucky. And then once again we moved off to a farm where we were going to establish brigade headquarters. And it was the same as it was in Normandy. Dig in. Get yourself organised.
Did the farm have a name?
No, I don't know. I never was very good at foreign languages.
So once again, you're going back into a routine very
similar. Yeah, once
similar.
Again, a routine very much the same. Get up or stand to in the morning, half an hour before daybreak, and half an hour after. And then wash and shave, clean yourself up, sort yourself out, have your meal, breakfast. Same as you do any other time.
And how long were you doing that for?
Three or four days, I would think. Because we then started...
What was the actual date of the drop? I'm sorry, I should have
24th asked. Of March.
And
and then we started the march through Germany. I mean, most of the time we were walking, marching, because we had very little transport. In fact, we had no transport at all. We started the march through Germany.
What do you remember of that? Again, as a headquarters group, you weren't in the front line.
Well, no, we weren't in the front line, no, but there was always aircraft overhead, and there was always a chance that an odd German plane would appear, and not very often, because the RAF chased them off most of the time.
When you say there were always aircraft overhead, you mean Allied aircraft, yeah.
Once again, it was a steady slog, stopping at night in fields and establishing a brigade headquarters and then moving off again the next day, perhaps stopping in a farm. I always found that out in the country, the Germans weren't very short of food. They had big hams hanging up in their fireplaces, and well, they weren't there long once we got there.
How did you get on with the Germans, the civilians?
Had very little to do with them. Fraternising wasn't encouraged. In fact, they were dead against it.
There was an actual ban.
Oh yeah, you weren't supposed to mix with the German civilians.
What was their attitude to you? I mean, I know you didn't see it much, but were they friendly or unfriendly?
Well, or no, they were always a bit sullen, and I don't think they particularly enjoyed having us here. I don't suppose they would do. We wouldn't have enjoyed having them here, but it was one of those things. They had, you know, we were there and they had to lump it.
Now, are there any particular incidents you remember from the advance into Germany?
I can remember a couple of Canadians out of the Canadian Parachute Battalion. We were advancing up the road one day and these two came along. They were in their camouflage smocks and everything, but they both had silk top hats, which they had on, and they were in a big open carriage with a couple of big grey horses pulling it. And they were driving up the road in there. It was a sight of sore eyes, really. We used anything we could get. Trucks, motorbikes, push bikes, prams, anything to carry your stuff in.
Because you didn't have your own?
We didn't have our own transport, no. We finally finished up our platoon, finished up with a big Tatra truck. And that was big enough for any whole platoon to sit down in the back of it. And what we did was we nicked some benches out of some town and put them in the back, and so we had something to sit on and a truck to carry us along in. And we gradually went up through Germany, finished up crossing the River Elbe, I think, at a place, Lauenburg. And then there was an advance from there up to the Baltic coast at a place called Wismar.
Called what?
Wismar, Wismar, which we reached about the 10th of May.
So you were on the V-Day had taken place while you were on the way?
No, the V-Day was the 14th of May, wasn't it?
I thought it was the 8th, but whatever.
Well, all right then, it was before V-Day, because V-Day...
Tell me what you remember about V-Day.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, V-Day was the same as any other day, wasn't it? I mean, we did do... I think we went and had a day out at a lake near Wismar. But unfortunately, one of our blokes took a canoe out and turned it over and drowned after having done Normandy, the Rhine crossing, the Ardennes, which seemed a little bit hard luck, really. But there, once again, it was just a matter of sorting ourselves out, carrying on with the normal routine. We weren't there very long because I think it was about the 18th of May, they trucked us back down to Lüneburg Heath, flew in a load of Dakotas and flew us home. And we got home, went back to Bulford, went on a month's leave, walked back into the mess on the Sunday night, and the colour sergeant said to me, "Got your kit packed, Paul?" And I said, "No, I've only just got in." He said, "Well, go and pack it, because you're flying out to India tomorrow morning, advance party."
So you were on leave
for a month.
We had from May to June.
Fortnight's disembarkation leave and a fortnight's embarkation leave.
And did you know what was happening, I mean, at all?
No, we knew that the war had ended. We knew that we'd come back. We knew that eventually we were going to go out to the Far East for the invasion of Singapore and Japan. As I say, we didn't think it was going to be that... Well, I didn't think it was going to be that quick, but as I say, I went back into the mess and they said, "You're flying out to India tomorrow morning." Luckily, they postponed that and we went out a fortnight later. So I was back in India when war ended, having been there when it started.
So... What was the trip like back out to India? You went.
We went out on a troop on a ship, troop ship. I don't remember the name of it. But it was once again like the old pre-war troop ships, hammocks, and they wouldn't ship pigs like it nowadays.
So this was about June, July.
Yeah, because we were back in back there for August the 4th, was it, the end of the war, something like that?
Right about the 8th, the 10th, 8th, I can't remember, yeah.
Well, anyway, we were back there. We were told that the war had ended, that they dropped the atom bombs, and the war had ended, and we were on a train going up from Bangalore up into the Nilgiri Hills in southern India to do a jungle warfare course, ready for jungle warfare.
Well, how did you react to the news?
Well, it was the same as any other day, really. I mean, it didn't make much difference to you, really. You still had to go on with your job. You still had to do... We still did our jungle warfare course. We still...
Tell me about that. That was where?
That was at play in the Nilgiri Hills in southern India. And there they taught us how to live in the jungle, how to fight in the jungle. And
but tell me about that. How did you live and fight in the jungle?
Well, I mean, you made... Once again, you had to make yourself comfortable as best you could. You had to try and make yourself a bed up in slung between two trees so that you were off the ground. If you dug in, you had to dig in. I mean, if you had meals with you, we had one lieutenant who was our meal leader, and it was always a standing joke. You say to him, "We've got your meal, Ginger," and he always used to say yes. Well, one morning we went out on the exercise and someone said to him, "We've got your meal, Ginger," and he said yes. I said, "Well, go and get it. It's down the bloody mule lines." And he went down to get this mule, came back with it. About 3 miles out to where we were going, it broke loose and disappeared. And he had to go back and get it all the way back to camp and get this blooming mule that had gone back to camp. Then when we got out there, the instructor said, "Right, dig it in." And he said, "Dig it in? What do you mean, dig it in?" They said, "Dig it in. It's got to be dug in the same as you're dug in." So he had to dig a big hole and a ramp down for to lead this mule down into his slit trench. That cured him and wanting to be a mule leader, I tell you. And then we did the jungle warfare, learnt how to build bamboo rafts and cross rivers and anything like that.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Yeah, it was all right for a change. Knowing full well we weren't going to have to bloody well use it. And then... They rerouted the division to Palestine, 6th Airborne Div.
Now, when did that happen?
That happened August, September, about October, I think, 45. And we were then in train from southern India up to Karachi, and that was a 7-day train journey, 7 days and nights, in a third class bog carriage, which...
What was that like?
It was wooden seats. The toilet was a hole in the floor. And there was no comfort in it at all. There was a cook thing on the train where you used to, were able to go, where they went along and got their meal. We got our meals and that, but other than that, it was pretty basic. And that, as I say, that was a 7-day and night journey up to Karachi. And there we were near Karachi Racecourse, and we used to run around Karachi Racecourse every morning for PT. One of the funny things they got up to. But then after a while we were went on a boat and went to Port Tewfik.
What was anything on the voyage or just...
No, it was just... The boat was so bloody small when we were in Alexandria we left from. And everybody was sort of over one side, looking over the side, and they said, "We'll just distribute your weight more about the ship. It's beginning to give it a list." So that was a good start to start off with. But, we went back and then went by train up to Palestine. We were at Sarafand, near Sarafand to start off with.
And what were your first impressions of Palestine?
Well, the place was all right. It was the blooming people who occupied it were a problem.
What could you see as a problem there?
Well, they hated the sight of us.
Who did?
The Jews did. They used to sing a song about a red flower with a black heart, and because we were all maroon berries, and they didn't go a lot on the airborne forces at all.
And they showed this dislike.
Oh yes, yeah, they used to spit at you when you were on when we had curfews on. You walked along the street and they used to lean over the banister and spit on you, and throw a bucket of water at you and all sorts of stuff. They didn't, they weren't over keen on us at all. And they had put mines on the side of roads. They got into the car park one night and shot seven blokes who were asleep on guard.
I'll come to that. Now, what about the what sort of barracks were you at Sarafand?
Camp. It was a tented camp.
And what were the tents like there?
Well, they were only big EPIP tents, they used to call them. They were more like they weren't bell tents, they were the big sort of marquee tents.
And how many men would be in that?
Oh, a dozen or so. Because there was room there for, you know, proper beds and things like that. It wasn't just a matter of laying on the floor. And but then we weren't there very long before they decided that there was no need for a defence company for brigade headquarters. And so our platoon was posted to the 9th Parachute Battalion. And they were at near Gaza at
so how long were you at Sarafand?
Oh, only about a month.
So just about in the yeah. Now, were any of these attacks made on the brigade you know, the attacks you mentioned, were while you were at Sarafand, or were they
No,
later
they
on?
Were later on, when one of the battalions was on duty in a car park at Tel Aviv.
So while you were at Sarafand, was there any actual attacks made?
Well, no, but there was always curfews on. I mean, you'd put a curfew on and...
Tell me about the what was your defence platoon doing? Were you enforcing the...
You would be looking after brigade headquarters. You'd have an advanced brigade headquarters go out and you'd have to go out to look after them. No, it wasn't until later on that we started putting curfews on when...
So at Sarafand, did you dig in round the tent?
No.
So you were just really at Sarafand?
Yeah, not much. No. And then we moved... to the 9th Power Battalion.
So the whole platoon went to the 9th?
Yeah. I was a platoon sergeant.
And where did you join the 9th?
At a camp near Gaza, it was. It was an airfield. And we were quite near the airfield.
And what sort of accommodation did you have there?
Once again, EPIP tents. And
so it's pretty much the same.
Well, yeah, but we did have electricity, we did have electric lights, and we had a proper building for a sergeant's mess and a proper building for an officer's mess and a nappy canteen, which was a proper building. It was only the sleeping accommodation that was tents.